Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, and today we are actually having a very special episode for you. We have had several requests for the podcast to start looking at other areas of the market outside of Europe and NA, and I'm really happy to introduce David Harris from Guinevere Capital, i.e. Direwolves, on the show to take us through his story and the state of the Oceania market when it comes to esports. It's been some quite big news over the course of the last few weeks, so we'll mine into that in a little bit more detail and also just see where he sees the Oceanic market being at the moment and what kind of milestones we can start working towards on a global basis to make sure that esports is here, there and everywhere. So David, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get started, let's just dive into your story real quick, because you have quite an interesting background in the world of sport and have subsequently thrown all of your effort into the esports market. So just take us through your story, how you got to where you are today, and also your history as a gamer and your personal life.
Yes, I've got a quite diverse background, as you mentioned. I've had probably 15 years in traditional sport, but initially as a sports physio. So I've worked with a lot of traditional sports teams in that capacity. I worked with some of the Australian Football League and soccer teams in Australia. Then I was a year and a half in Sri Lanka working with the Sri Lankan cricket team, which was a great experience. And then I had 11 years over your side of the world, actually, based in the UK, okay, where I've worked in Premier League football, rugby, county cricket, etc. But I got to the point in my career where I'd sort of achieved everything I wanted in the sports medicine side, but saw things could be done a lot better, in my view, in the business of sport. So I did an MBA at Oxford while I was over there to try and sort of move more into that business side. I worked in a couple of startups in sports insurance, etc. And then moved back to Australia. I had a little bit of time in traditional strategy consulting with Boston Consulting Group, but then moved into sport and entertainment consulting with the Gemba Group. And then I had my last real job in inverted commas. So I was a general manager at National Rugby League in Australia, which is probably the biggest football code over here. So after about 2.5 years there, I got sick of telling clubs how to run their business and getting ignored. So I thought, time to put my money where my mouth is and start my own sports investment business. So I started Guinevere Capital with a few people I'd always wanted to work with. And we were wheeling and dealing on a few big traditional sports assets. But the first deal we got across the line was actually LG Direwolves in esports. And then we pretty quickly came to the conclusion it's silly to fight the tide in traditional sports, which is ridiculously congested when we can potentially surf the wave of esports. So since then, that was about 20 months ago, I guess. In Australia, we have been a few years behind the rest of the world. So we could see what's happening everywhere else in the world and didn't think Australia was going to go on a different tangent. So we have 14 projects running in esports at various stages. Yeah. But the big ones are the LG Direwolves, which are the top Oceanic League of Legends team. We have Superstellar, which is a diversity and inclusiveness brand focused on female development. And then we do that in conjunction with Supernova Comic-Con and Gaming, which is one of the big expos out here. We've just launched Sydney Drop Bears, an Overwatch Contenders team here. And I think the other quite visible project is the Esports High Performance Centre, which is built into Allianz Stadium in the Sydney Cricket Ground precinct. So at a high level, our model is bringing towards together the traditional sports world, both on the performance side and the business side with esports. Sure. So quick history, that's sort of how I got to where we are today. And my history as a gamer, I think it'll show how old I am. Some of the titles will start dropping, but I actually made a play-by-email game when I was at university.
Oh, wow.
ran for a while, so that shows how far I go back. But it's quite funny. I chatted to a couple of venture capitalists the other day, and he was involved in Dune, and Dune was probably one of the first real-time strategy games I was writing to.
Is that based on the books?
Yeah, based on the books.
Yeah, I am so hyped for the movie when it comes out, actually. Yeah. I only read the first two books recently. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a great story. There was a really cheesy old film about it too, but I think it's due a remake remake fairly soon. So, yeah, but I've had a bit of a 10-year hiatus on the gaming, being married and kids, but now I've got an excuse to get back into it, saying it's research.
Excellent. That's what we love to hear. So one of the things I'm actually quite curious to kind of mine down into on your side is the high performance center, actually, because one of the easiest metrics for kind of understanding how the industry has matured over the course of the last few years is you just look at the infrastructure that's been around the players. I've mentioned this a few times on multiple podcasts, kind of like how it's gone from a former pro player to this whole operation of support staff and analysts and sports psychologists these days. But I haven't actually spoken with someone who's worked in that field in the world of sport yet on the show. So how many comparisons are you seeing from the kind of experiences that you're hearing from players about how they're looking to optimize their performance? Or is it more this is a top-down initiative which is just trying to elevate the overall level of play whilst actually educating the players about how they should view themselves as a elite athlete along the way?
It's a combination, but yeah, there is certainly a degree of top-down, just because we've been taking what we've seen working in the traditional sports world, and not everything translates, but a lot of it does. I think being in Australia, having a much smaller population and being relatively isolated, and this applies across all sports. If you look at our pure numbers, we shouldn't compete at anything in the world, but we managed to punch above our weight by being a bit more scientific about it, I guess, and just really have a focus on developing talent, because we don't have enough to turn and burn. I've been over to China, I've been over to Korea, I've seen some of the setups over there, and yeah, they've got great investment, but a lot of the time I haven't thought they were particularly as I say, scientific. There wasn't lots of sports science.
Yeah, it's much more
of
a volumes game, right? In there. Just because of the...
That's right. And it's easy when you've got hundreds of thousands of kids playing PC games.
Yeah, of course.
So some pretty good talent bubbles up to the top, as we've seen. But, that's just not going to work over here. So we have to take a different approach. And even culturally, the gaming house theory started over in Korea. But, putting a bunch of young people together 24/7 in a house where they live, work and train together, it's sort of a reality TV type of a process where you're looking for friction to make some good entertainment. But if you're trying to develop elite talent, it doesn't work. So we've consciously separated their living and working environment, even though they're sort of on opposite sides of a park, so it's only a short walk apart. And that has been driven by the players. That was something they definitely wanted, and we believe that's the best way to do it. So I think separating out the working living environment has been really important. Just so when you go into the office, you're going to work, you're switched on, and when you're not there, you actually relax. So we'd actually have computers in their gaming house. So they're switched on when they're in there, and they're completely switched off when they're away. Part of rather than just being the physical building, the Esports High Performance Center, it's great for compartmentalising your training and your day, and that's what we've been really focused on, trying to get away from grinding and sort of playing 16 hours straight and thinking through osmosis, you're somehow going to get better. So we really break the day up. So they'll do a scrim, but then they'll leave. They'll really break down what they do well, what they do poorly, what are they going to do differently next time. So we've got some different rooms. We've got a scrim room, which is just for match conditions. When you're in there, you're 100% switched on. We've got a sort of a separate solo queue room. We've got the sort of the area for the UTS. We've got a separate VOD view room. We've got sort of the chill out down area down the end with the couches. So I think by physically moving areas, it does sort of change their mindset. So it makes it easier for to switch on, switch off. Whereas when you're in the gaming house, you're on the couch, you're not sort of in a review, or you're just messing around on your social media.
Yeah, I've actually heard multiple stories from other teams based here in Europe. They've actively had to put a block on the Wi-Fi late at night because people will refuse to actually keep a sleep schedule because they just, I guess it's either just a lack of maturity or it's just the fact that there is just so much of this kind of intangible stress and energy in the household that it's actually quite hard to switch off. When I used to train Muay Thai a lot more than I do now, I've actually only just got stuck back into my boxing recently, and I'm absolutely loving it. One of the things I used to realize was you get to a point where when you get to that kind of heightened state of like a flow state, when you're acting without thinking, it's all kind of impulse. And actually at the highest level of performance, if you're hearing the voice in your head actually thinking rather than just acting, you're actually on the back foot already. So I think any and all advantages that you can eke out in terms of actually making the level of practice more efficient, or if you're just able to kind of declutter the pro's brains and actually allow them to kind of be a human being and actually have their own schedule, then that's, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but that's going to have massive impacts just on their longevity in the sport, their overall happiness, and actually their performance in game too.
That's right. And one of the key words you said was the sustainability and the long-term in sport. One of the goals of the Esports High Performance Centre is actually to try and prevent that burnout, which seems to be coming at the moment. Kids are only having sort of 3 years and then having had enough. I think part of it is just how much they're playing, and as we say, that environment where they're all living, working, training together. So hopefully through setting up pieces like this, it'll become a longer-term sustainable career. And obviously the economics are the other factors, and how the money's coming into esports will be interesting to see how long a player can last at elite level. And our feelings, the ceiling's a lot higher than sort of the mid-20s where people seem to be churning out at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there are always going to be those kind of outliers. If you look at the Virtus Pro CSGO lineup, those guys have been around for donkey's years, and are always going to be certain pros that are going to be way ahead of the game. But yeah, there's an absolutely massive amount of churn. I'm really excited not just to see you guys doing this, but a lot of esports teams are starting to take this more seriously, especially with all of the sports backing in NA in the franchise ecosystems. Like, I know that's one of the things that we're going to be doing at Infinite, and I've already started doing internally with the business team as well, as actually utilizing some really amazing performance staff with sporting backgrounds to make sure that everyone's on the right page, and that if kids say, or if all they want to eat is Papa John's, then maybe they can be educated on why that might not be the best thing for them to move, like maximizing their time in game. But we've got quite a lot to get to, so let's step away from that. I can always find myself getting bogged down in speaking about kind of performance optimization in that way, because the gray lines between mental and physical, I mean, it's pretty symbiotic as well. Like, if you're not actually putting the right fuel in the car, then it's not going to drive very far, right? So it kind of works either way. But let's just kind of take a step back and look at the overall state of Oceanic Esports at the moment. You were just saying before we got started that the Esports Game Association Australia has officially launched, and you had an event last week. How important is this organization to kind of actually establishing some form of due process and best practice in the local market, and what does that kind of say about the state of Oceanic Esports at the moment? Because we're not seeing a massive amount of huge teams be based there, but from the kind of communications that I'm seeing on LinkedIn and lots more articles actually coming out from the region, that there's definitely a super engaged audience that are ready and willing just to kind of get involved at whatever level it might be, if it's pro or,
that's right,
or as fans.
Yeah, as I said early on, we are a few years behind the rest of the world, but we're starting to close that gap rapidly. I think, as you, we've hit those key milestones that have sort of launched esports into the stratosphere elsewhere in the world, happened here last year. That we had Intel Extreme Masters came out, so it was a big stadium event, and I think people from outside of the industry, once they actually go to a big event with people yelling and cheering, and they suddenly get it. No matter how many times you explain it, until you can touch and feel it,
that's exactly what I've said to everyone I've tried to bring in from the world of sport, from a recruitment side, is if you're serious about this role, here's three events in your local area that you need to go to, even if they're not major, just to feel the electricity in the room. But please go on.
That's right. And then non-endemic sponsors coming in. So we've had some St. George Bank over here has become involved in a couple of pieces recently. Hungry Jack's, which is our Burger King, now sponsors the League of Legends Oceanic Pro League. So that coming, them coming in makes a big difference. And the big one, traditional sports teams buying in. So we've had the Adelaide Crows and the Essendon Bombers, which are two Australian Football League teams, have bought into major esports clubs. And I think those three factors are really sort of seeing an upward inflection. We've always had that core community, but now it's sort of breaking out into the mainstream, I guess, is how you could say it. A year and a half ago, it's banging the drum, saying, everyone, hey, you should be looking at esports. And I think now, same as everyone else is finding, now everyone's piling in, not knowing what to do. So it's a different challenge. But and part of that, rather than trying to people going around trying to educate one at a time or discuss issues, it's great if we can bring everyone together in an industry body. But there's been a group of us who obviously all have our own self-interest, but sort of diverse across the whole ecosystem. So there's Nick Vanzetti, who's managing director of ESL over here, myself, we've got people from the from hardware suppliers, agencies, players, etc. Coming together just with the common goal of trying to grow the industry in Australia, and just sort of, I guess the value chain is so complex in esports, which makes it such a challenge, and that's quite often scares off the sort of non-endemic sponsors, government, etc., sort of who want to help but are a little bit concerned about the lack of structure. So the Esports Games Association of Australia is by no means sort of a top-down power grab. It's very much building a member base and sort of being there for the members to represent the members. So we've had a group of us together in an inaugural board, but then there'll be obviously a voting process for board renewal. So, we can have fresh voices and talent come through. But I've spent a long time in traditional sport, and I've just seen sports governance go so horribly wrong and really hold back the development of the sport. And the reason I find esports so exciting is it's your chance to start again, which in traditional sports you do anything to start again and actually get it right from the start. And and we see this as our opportunity to try and do that.
Yeah, I mean, super exciting. There are quite a few examples that kind of spring to mind when I kind of talk about where you guys are at the moment. We had James Dean and Rob Black from ESL UK on the podcast, and we were talking about how Birmingham had just been confirmed as the next ESL 1 major for a Dota 2, and we've also got the FACEIT major at the end of the year for CSGO, which is a absolutely massive kind of landmark year for UK esports, and as like the fifth largest gaming market in the world, we've been kind of underrepresented by actually getting these top tier events around and actually, you know, putting the flag in the soil to really demonstrate to all the fans and sponsors, and also just help put the business case together of why UK esports should be taken so seriously. I mean, the Oceanic market has a few other issues with just how far it is away from everything else, so that's always going to be an issue. But I don't know if I'm spilling secrets that you and I haven't even discussed yet, but looking at what Astralis have done with the Blast Pro Series and actually put Astralis in the local spotlight, completely destroyed all of the local broadcasting across TV, across radio, apps, like the metrics were insane. So whilst you're having this kind of global support from the likes of ESL and other events, actually putting Australia and the Oceanic region on their roadmap, I think it would be absolutely amazing to see some of these homegrown series actually being put together as well. This might be naivety from my side, but I haven't seen many of those kind of spring up that are still drawing in the international talent. Is this anything that's on your radar as well, or is that we spilling too many beans?
No, we've got a lot of in the capital esports entertainment, and one of them is content, which is obviously digital content, but also live events. As we discussed, I think getting more of the big international teams out to Australia just gives an amazing profile. Like the Intel Extreme Masters at Qs Bank Arena in Sydney last year, there's 14,000 in the crowd, which was fantastic, but there was 8 million watching online. So it just gives that bit of profile to the the local industry out here. But as everyone knows, Australia isn't really convenient to get to from anywhere in the world, other New Zealand maybe. So it's the time zones, the travel time. I was chatting to a couple of European teams last night who are coming out for IEM, and the management aren't coming. Just even no matter how pretty Sydney is, it's a 23-hour flight for them, which and a 12-hour time difference, which isn't quite as appealing. So but we do need more global exposure. But that goes both ways. It goes obviously bringing teams into local market, but I think Australian teams starting to become more competitive and break through and compete on the international scale helps. My analogy is soccer, which wasn't a big sport over here, but Australia qualifying for the World Cup, suddenly get the soccer effect where people don't really care about the sport, suddenly jump on the bandwagon or up in the middle of the night watching just because there's an Australian team out there trying to punch above their weight and go on a bit of a run.
Yeah, that kind of happened the same with us with
I think now
curling in the Winter Olympics. It just became absolutely massive for some reason. Because our team got to bronze or in the semi-finals, I think, maybe.
Great, yeah. So, I think it's really important that Australian teams are getting more opportunities, or Australian and New Zealand teams are getting more opportunities overseas. So just getting those direct passes for at least one team into the major international events is great for helping the industry over here. You've seen teams in the past, such as Renegades, who are effectively Australian teams, have had to relocate to be competitive. But we'd like to think we can actually start developing talent here and be competitive on a global scale. But the challenge is we're so isolated. It's sort of the ping means it's too hard to play anywhere else in the world at a decent level. So that's why we send our players over to Korea for boot camp several times a year, et cetera, to try and combat that.
I mean, from the event side, we've already seen the likes of Facer actually do an event down in Mexico. And I don't know whether that's going to be back on the agenda again in the next few years. But if you're looking for an amazing location for pros to go and enjoy themselves and actually go and see another part of the world, and that puts an amazing piece of fan experience there for the local market too. You know, I could see Australia as a potential for that too. You know, so that could be one interesting way. But obviously, that's not super sustainable, especially if most of the pros are going to be very hungover the next day. But you know, that kind of ties back into our conversation around actually viewing yourself as a professional athlete. It's one of the things I really hope to see improve is it seems to be a lot more in CSGO, maybe just because the players are older. But kind of seeing that around major events, even it's not particularly great, but I suppose it's going to be young people with far too much money, so it's always going to be some interesting stories there.
It's over here the money isn't really there yet, so but once overseas, obviously that's starting to change. So I said Sydney's a great backdrop for an event, and it's a we've tried to actually as part of the recruiting pitch to get international players over to Australia. We talk about like the amazing lifestyle and all, etc. But it's quite funny. Like last year, we had an amazing team house in Piermont, looked over Sydney Harbour Bridge with about $3.5 million, and the players would just close the blinds, and the glare on the screen was too much. So they could have been in the in the cellar of anywhere in Australia. So
what a shame! But, it was too sunny. We're starting to see a bit of fun. I remember that.
But we're starting to see more overseas pros come over here. And as I said, one competitive advantage I think Australia does have is developing talents. There's a good example, Dockler, who came out for North America, but only played solo queue. He just played for one split at the back end of last year. He'd just come over. They've been on an amazing run the split before, so they came over to Rift Rivals with us. And we sort of got to know him, and we noticed we have quite a close relationship with the Sing Gaming team, and it's quite funny. Like, he was obviously a very good solo queue player, but had absolutely no idea in some cases about the working as a team and just the general land strategies, etc. but a quite charismatic Captain Juves, and we worked with him because with rivals you work as a team, and what really stood out for Dockler was just amazing the way he could take feedback. He just wasn't flustered at all, which is a really humble guy, and just took absolutely everything on board. And then he was just in Australia for one split, and then popped up on the Optic Gaming Academy, and now he's up in the first team. And that was just a 6 months with a mid-tier team out in Oceania, giving that chance of professional play. And before you know it, he's playing in the ALCS. Yeah, I mean, so I think there's definitely something in talent spending time out.
All of the feedback that I've heard internally from him has been really positive as well. I mean, whilst Optic are now out of playoffs, and have had a pretty rough start to the season, I think there is a lot of potential there in the team to actually do well in the next split. But yeah, it's a super awesome example of seeing someone with potential who definitely would not have been able to get that kind of exposure in his local market, and actually being well in NA or Europe, but actually being able to do that and then actually jumping ship over. So yeah, super interesting. I think as kind of more of these more local markets start to get involved in esports seriously, if that's through the more pure tier one titles like League, CSGO and Overwatch, or if it's through more of a mobile platform, just because that's just way more really available, like we were speaking about on our episode with Deborah from Space Ape. I think we're just going to see way more opportunity for the overall ecosystem of esports to be set up globally, and then there's going to definitely be opportunities for the kind of deals that go down with a premiership football players going over to kind of see out the twilight of their career in Chinese football at the very, very top level, or maybe at the junior level, actually getting some experience internationally as well. So super excited for that. So Oceanic market is a few years behind, but some really exciting stuff going on. And despite the young nature of the market, you've still been able to bring on some awesome sponsors with the local League of Legends, which is great. And that we're seeing all the associations be put in place, and some really interesting collaborations with the world of sports so far. So sounds really exciting, man. I think you're in a absolutely fantastic position with the right blend of experience to really see this market through. So I'm actually really curious to see how everything plays out, I would say over the next few years, but it's most likely going to be over the course of the next 6 to 12 months, just because of how insanely quick things move in this industry. But that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, I think, esports. If you look back over the last 40 years, other than UFC, I can't see anything that's come out of nowhere to become a multi-billion dollar industry. As you say, it's just evolving so quickly. The fact it's evolved fast organically to where it is, and now with all the major players jumping in, it's just a fascinating space to be in, and I'm lucky to be part of it over here, and hopefully be
have a little smile on their face, because I somehow managed to mention MMA and UFC in every episode, but this is the first time that a guest has brought it up first, so it's not just me. Amazing. So dude, thank you very much for your time. Really, I think it'd be great just to bring you back on in the next few months once we've kind of seen a bit more of the ecosystem pop up, and maybe after Rift Rivals and see some more international presence from your org and a few others. But before I let you go, let's just drum through some rapid fire questions, and then I'll let you on with the rest of your day. We're trying to bring a philosophical and positive vibe to the Esports Roundtable podcast, not just about the state of the industry, but for people to feel inspired by the leaders of the space. So one of the bigger questions I've been asking everyone off air and on air is, who's your biggest mentor been in business or just life in general, and what's been the best piece of advice that you've received?
I think mentors are incredibly important, so I've had a lot over the years, but one I always think back to is Teddy Watson, who's at Oxford, one of the old grey hairs there, and I was doing one of my first startups with him on my board, and he had a lot of good advice. But he said, for an entrepreneur, he says the most important quality is persistence, and I completely agree with that. It's even though you sort of look back, you feel like you made a lot of progress. Everything takes longer than you expect, and it's always harder than harder than you'd like. So I think the key point one is actually planning for that, and don't get yourself wedged where you're going to be up against the deadline. If you don't hit it, you're in serious trouble, whether it comes to cash or whatever. And two is surrounding yourself with the right people that help you keep on keeping on.
Yeah, I can definitely echo both of those from my experience over the last few years, and I've probably made mistakes, especially with the first one, by maybe putting myself in some do or die situations. But it all came off, so we can't really complain. Next one is, it's kind of a meme in the business community that esports has no working hours, and it's probably the same with a lot of startups. What do you do to keep yourself sane and healthy as a professional? Like, what's like the main tip that you could give someone?
Yeah, so with the Oceanic Pro League and League of Legends, a few weeks back we had Headspace Round, which was a fantastic initiative, Headspace being a mental health charity, and it was great. Everyone gave their stories about what they do to keep in a good headspace out off the rift and outside of the game. So mine was, I've got a little 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, so they're good for resetting me. Not great for my sleep sometimes, but getting out to the park or the playground with them is really important for me. And then more broadly, we really push a balanced lifestyle with all our players in the Esports High Performance Center. So I try to practice what I preach. So we've got a gym, we've got a pool, we've got all the facilities on site there. So exercise for me is one of the key pieces.
Having everything in the right place and obviously spending time with the kids. I mean, yeah, I didn't know what it feels like so far, but from everyone I've spoken to in the industry with young children, they say that's really the joy in actually completely realigns your priorities in terms of why you do things and what you're doing them for. So that's awesome. And just to close off, what's one thing that we don't know about you or that we wouldn't assume about you from listening to the show?
Yeah, it's a good one. I'll give you something that's probably relevant to you, not to a lot of your audience. I've got a few stats from the sporting world, but they're mostly Commonwealth sports. I've hit Mutai Marilithlin to the boundary batting of a test ground, batting left-handed with a stump. Run into the middle of a packed Millennium Stadium at a football promotion match, which is probably one of the richest events in the world. I've had a few stats out there in the traditional sports world, but the one I come back to that the Australians always laugh at is I grew up in Bonnie Doon, and there's a film called The Castle that makes fun of my hometown about how simple the folk are. So yes. If you ever watched the Castle, you'll know that's where I'm from.
Okay, well, I haven't seen the films, and I'm not going to make any brash comments off the back of that. But I think that's a good place to end it. But thank you so much for the time today. Awesome. Been really sweet, and I think a lot of the fans that have asked for this will be super excited to either have their thoughts confirmed or at least see that there is a really bright future in your market. So, dude, thank you very much for the time. And yeah, how can everyone reach out to you if they want to get in touch on the old socials?
Yep, my Twitter handle is @DaveHarrisOz, AUS rather than OZ. Just feel free to drop me an email, dharris@guinevere.com. It's probably even harder to spell, but you can work it out. I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable. If you want to get in touch with us, we are at ES Roundtable Pod on Twitter and Esports Roundtable Podcast on Facebook. Guys, thank you very much for your time, and we'll speak to you next week.